It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm just delighted to be joined today by JJ Bull the Bullet.
Hello
there, how are you?
Oh yes.
Yeah? Excited for today's show?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's going to be just like normal.
Me too. Also, goo goo gaga, it's Ruben, the baby boy Pinder. There he is.
I'm not John, so I'm not going to do the noise back, but no. Hello, how are you?
I respect you for that, you know? Yeah. John thinks he's a great guy, not here today, obviously he's on holiday, thinks he can take a holiday, he can. He's fine. He's
legally entitled to it.
Legally entitled to a
holiday. I prefer super sub in this context.
I think you're a super sub, but also I respect you that you wouldn't give me just one little wah.
I respect you too.
Wah. Okay, fine. Well, there we go. We're joined by Ruben and JJ today for a bumper-packed show full of excitement and misery. And let's begin with the misery. Now, I'll tell you what's happening in the show a little bit later. But before we get there, last week I promised you an announcement. Now, can we just look at JJ's face on the camera for a second there? Yeah. And then back to me. If you're watching the video, that should give you some level of anticipation for whatever. How long can I drag this out for? For what I'm about to
say. Quite long. You're about to do something quite big.
If you haven't been watching the video, you're just listening to the audio, you know, missing out, guys. This has been a great product. And bean is the important word there. I'm winging this. It's going okay.
I like it so far.
Yeah. The TIFO Football Podcast, in its current form, makeup, style, design, is dead.
Joe's killing it.
Well, actually, that's true. It's not dead yet.
Yeah.
Because we're doing it now.
Strangling it slowly.
I'm slowly strangling it. And it will be dead, Last Gasp's Gone, by our last official show is the 5th of June. That's when we record it. That's the actually...
No, 3rd of June. It's when we record.
We record.
Final recorded.
No, I think you're wrong.
Monday, 3rd of June.
I think Monday is the 5th of June. I think it goes out on the 6th of June. Yeah, you're doing it again, aren't you? Yeah.
That's
now you see why we have to kill the show.
That's why we're killing it.
But yeah, our last official show will be... we'll release on Tuesday, the 6th of June. And look, listen, there are plenty of reasons why we're doing it. One of them is talent availability. I mean, come on.
Fuck off.
Look, we've got this. How can you do a podcast with two grown men and a baby?
It's
like it
doesn't. It's a good name for a podcast.
Two grown men is quite a good name for a podcast. It doesn't work, though, because on account of how tiny and small his brain is, because he's only a little baby. No, it's nothing to do with Ruben.
You're referring
Pinder.
To Ruben there, yes.
He's been a delight, Ruben Pinder. He's been a delight. This is one of the reasons why it's sad to let it go, because imagine what he could have become when he grew up.
He was just
up.
Starting to get somewhere.
He was.
But we're going to hold that down just deliberately to hinder your career.
I think so, yeah.
That's one of the main reasons, I think.
That's one of the main reasons.
Yeah.
Another one of the main reasons is... We've been doing this for a long time. This podcast has been going in one form or another, mostly this one, for 7 years. I think it's been in this form since the 2018 World Cup, maybe just before that. So for a good 5 years, we've been running as an off-the-weekend football podcast. And, you know...
Seb isn't even on it anymore.
Seb's not on it anymore. He's tired. And I don't think we've really explained why, but Seb lives in Germany. You know, he loves it out there. He lives out there with his wife. And he sort of maintained doing the podcast with us for a while, but it's no fun to be the video link guy when you're linking into a room full of people having a nice time. There's that half a second delay.
Seb's
not a funny guy.
He does
anyway.
All the nice colour.
He's the only one who knows, apart from tactics, he's the guy who knows everything.
Yeah.
So he's gone. The show's worse because of that. John's terrific. Great guy. Not even here.
He texts me and he said... remember to ask Joe what he would do if he found an actual mermaid, half fish, half person on the beach.
Right, is that why you asked me that before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did we conclude what we were going to do?
I think I said I was going to call the police.
Yeah. And I asked him what if it was screaming Snitch. For help.
I still call them. It's just all about accountability for
me. It's screaming for help, and it's a person. It just has half a body of a fish.
Yeah.
This mermaid's done nothing wrong.
You don't know what it's done. Maybe they cast it away from mermaid society.
Guilty until proven innocent, is it now? Well, this poor mermaid. Just lob it back in the sea.
And here now, another reason why the TIFO show is coming to an end. Is we can't contain ourselves on the path. We can't stay on the righteous path of football any longer. Listen, the point is, we've been doing this for 5 years. I'm tired. I can't be bothered to do it anymore.
Kill it while it's good.
I got promoted recently here. A little round of applause for me, please, obviously. No? No clap. No one claps in the office. No one cared. However, two things now, important things to mention. We're not actually killing the show. We're just killing the show format. And by that, I mean JJ, me, and John, and it was Seb, now occasionally Ruben Pinder, gathering on a Monday after the weekend to talk about the weekend of football. Steve Hankey put his hand up there as well to say, and me.
He's quite a crucial.
It was embarrassing for both of us, wasn't it?
Very symbolic of that. Yeah.
Gathering up the weekend to talk about the football that has happened. That's the thing that's going to go. And part of the reason for that is that I think feel like we've taken that format as far as we can. I feel like we've done a good job of that. What do you think?
I think we've done a fine job.
The
podcast has been more fun now that we know we're going to kill it.
Yeah. Now, you may be sad, but because everything dies, okay? Everything and everyone dies. You will die. Everyone you know will die, yeah? And this is going to happen to you again and again. It's going to happen again and again. You like a TV show, it's going to get cancelled. Yeah? You like a book. Well, there won't be another one. Yeah?
You know when we spoke about doing this in a positive way?
Oh, shit. Yeah. Here's a positive thing, Steve Hankey, to bring this all to a close now. Yeah. There'll be one final show. What about that? Tell us about it, JJ. Where is it?
Well, the show, the actual show.
The show.
Well, because we have worked so hard over so long, we've managed to get ourselves booked into a little venue.
Oh yeah, how big is it? How little is it?
I can't remember the cap, but
I think there's 400 tickets.
Oh geez, oh,
that's quite a lot. Isn't
quite
it?
A lot of people will be there.
Yeah,
if anyone buys tickets.
Well,
now that you've told them to. But we're gonna play.
Oops.
Oh geez, we're gonna do a podcast live, the last ever show, in this form before it changes to be more exciting.
At Leicester Square Theatre.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that
sunny
exciting?
London town. In London town. In June, it will be sunny as well.
It will be lovely, yeah.
Leicester Square Theatre, June the 7th, Wednesday. June the 7th. You'll even get to see baby boy Pinder. He'll be on. He'll be at the back.
He'll be doing
switching
work.
Yeah.
<alarm.
laughs> He'll be actually working. Listen, tickets for this show, and it is the last show, I can promise you that, go on sale at midday today, and that's the day of release of the podcast, Tuesday the 25th of April, midday UK time. So we're announcing it before the tickets are on sale. Everyone has a sort of bit of a theoretically an even chance of getting them there.
Assuming everyone listens to the podcast at 9 a.m. on Tuesday.
Well, indeed, yeah. And those that don't will suffer. They may well suffer. What can you say?
Yeah.
But it is literally the last show. And you'll see Seb Staffordplaw. You'll see John McKenzie, you'll see JJ Bull, you'll see aforementioned Ruben Pinder at the back, you'll see myself, and you'll see, you know, a couple of other special guests as well. It will be the only one ever. And I am partly saying that to get you to buy tickets, but it does also happen to be true. So it's one of those nice things, one of those nice times when the reality also creates an urgency. It will be the last one ever.
It does sound like a marketing thing we might, or you specifically might do to try and sell tickets, but it is not one of those.
It is not, yeah.
Because I have had many discussions with you.
People are definitely expecting another date to be announced when it sells out in 2 minutes.
Yeah, there won't be a second date. There's no second date. We're only doing it because it's fun, yeah? That's it. That's literally the only reason.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what's on the show today. On the show today, we talk about Arsenal Southampton, very exciting. Yeah, how about that there? What else have we got? We're going to preview Arsenal Manchester City, which happens on Wednesday. That's also very exciting. We'll talk about that one. Goodness gracious me, Newcastle United did a hammeroo of Spurs over the weekend. Unexpected, but interesting. We'll discuss. And of course, the FA Cup occurred, as well as Wrexham being promoted, and somehow Aberdeen have been snuck into the plan. Didn't see that earlier. They're there now, aren't they? Was it you or Steve?
A bit of both, actually.
A bit of both. You did a double sneak.
Yeah. Very impressive. You know, it is interesting.
The SPL table is in here.
Wow.
Wow.
SPFL.
Well, it says SPL in the plan.
Oh, that's factually
correct.
Oh,
they added an F in, did they?
They added an F.
It's the Premiership.
What does F stand for?
Football.
I will now leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of the dentist. Actually, the dentist's father, who was also a dentist. My dentist's father, Mr. Dr. Dentist, who removed one of my wisdom teeth unexpectedly the other day and has left me with a large open wound in my mouth. So if you see me a little bit quieter than normal today, a little bit less aggressive on the uptake, it's because I don't want to dislodge the clot that's formed in the open wound for fear of developing what they call as dry root. Not dry root. Dry... Can't remember. Can't remember what it's called. Anyway, apparently it's one of the most painful things you can get. So I also haven't smoked for 3 days, and I am addicted to nicotine, so I am pretty...
You smoked for 3 days?
Yeah, and I'm pretty mad about it, to be honest. I know I'm doing a good job right now, but I'm kind of losing my
How
shit.
How are you coping with that?
I'm not coping. I'm really not. I've decided to kill the whole show because of dry socket. Yeah, yeah, dry socket. Very, you don't want to get dry socket.
Do not image search either. Ooh.
Do not image search dry socket. Do it. Yeah, I haven't smoked for 3 days. I don't know if I mean, I think I've told people I'm a smoker before. It's a terrible habit. Please don't do it. Although I want to. But yeah, it's not good for me. I feel like I'm in a dream. I feel like I'm in a dream.
We've been recording for about 25 minutes. And yeah. Haven't done anything yet.
No, that's true. All right, should we start the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, well, well. Arsenal 3 Southampton. Now, I asked you, JJ, last week, have they gone and fucked it? And you said maybe, yeah. Now, it feels more like that.
It does feel quite ominous, doesn't it?
And Southampton scored almost instantly in the game.
But 28 seconds, I think it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, obviously for Arsenal fans, not funny, but it is quite, like, this...
It's objectively funny.
When you come to a game, you're like, no, we've not bottled it, all this kind of language that's been going on.
Yeah.
And then you go into a game, and then you are losing to the team that's bottom of the league within 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It's quite funny.
Yeah.
Because then that shows that you've not...
Can we get a baby call on this? Baby call? What do you think? Bottle, no bottle?
No, well, no bottle, but...
Baby doesn't want bottle. Carry.
That's fine. And Aaron Ramsdale seems to be, because he's been one of their best players all season. Really important to how they've played... And it's the thing you can't work out. Is it a psychological issue that he's passing the ball straight to Southampton players who are pressing high up the pitch? Do they know that Arsenal's starting to wobble?
I think so.
You think it's psychological?
It's the manner of the defeats. Because like if it's very reminiscent of when Liverpool finished like a point behind City in 2019, the season they won the Champions League. You remember that game where Stones cleared the ball off the line and they were essentially like 10 millimetres away from winning the Premier League.
Yeah.
But... when you do have a lead and then you start dropping points, especially when you go 2 goals up against West Ham and Liverpool, and then you go 2 goals down to Southampton, that indicates some sort of psychological element to it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because I think Southampton took kickoff, pumped the ball up to Arsenal's end of the pitch, and then as Arsenal tried to play out, that was where the first goal came from. And yeah, it wasn't a confident pass. It was the wrong pass to make.
Yeah.
It was just very... It was very silly.
Yeah.
Very
okay. Silly. I guess it also perhaps exposes a couple of things. I mean, John talked about Arsenal's defending a few weeks ago. But also, Saliba has been injured, won't return for Wednesday's game against Manchester City. Rob Holding's been playing. Arsenal have had various other injuries as well. So it does expose perhaps one of the squad issues with squad depth that Arsenal have. But do you think there's anything going on tactically, or do you agree with Ruben, JJ? You think it's just maybe they're understandably inside their own heads a little bit more than they were a few weeks ago?
Well, you could look at the other side of it and say they went down early, but then they also had the mental fortitude to fight back and get to 3-3.
Yeah.
And when it looked like, you know, it's 3-1 down, you're thinking, that's not very... The league's probably gone now. What are we going to do? Because you get Manchester City coming up on Wednesday, and that's obviously huge. So there's that side of it. I don't think it's tactical. It is just that different players do different things in different games.
I think they were only 2-0 down, by the way. Then 2-1, then 3-1.
2-1, 3-1, yeah.
But that's carry right. on, yeah.
They're coming back to Spiel.
The only reason I'm interrupting you is so that 15 people don't leave a comment saying the exact thing.
Yeah, and yeah. I can already see what they're going to say, yeah. Okay, so it's not the tactical part of it. It's just that the players aren't there. Saliba makes a huge difference. Like, the best teams are built off a really good goalkeeper and really good defenders. And you can see the difference. I can't remember the numbers, but I saw it earlier. The win percentage with Saliba and the team is much higher than without. He's been amazing. One of the best defenders in the league this season. Comfortably has made them solid at the back, can play out from the back, is confident, and you can see that the partnership with Gabriel works much better when he's there. Well, the partnership works because he's there.
Yeah.
But then it's just different when you put Rob Holding in. A fine squad player, but you can't maybe rely on him for all the bits and pieces you need. I think he gets beaten for one of the headers, I think at the near post for a corner.
He's not an elite centre-back.
Probably not. And I think, he's playing Premier League level though, right? So
but
he's not the extra bit, which is what Saliba is.
Yeah.
Like Saliba, you could drop him into Man City, you could drop him into Real Madrid or something like that, and he could play for those teams, but Rob Holding, probably not.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's a bad player.
He's still obviously absolutely fucking amazing at football.
Exactly, yeah. It's just the small bits, not attacking in a corner aggressively enough, for example, or just losing your man for a very quick second because maybe you're just not quite sure where you're meant to be.
I believe they call it the margins.
Yes, well.
Yes.
And that could be it. So that's one of the differences. And you saw when Tierney came in to replace Zinchenko.
Sean Connery has entered the room there, by the way. Yes, well.
Yeah, well, yeah, he did. He's left again, though, hasn't he?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe you're telling me he's gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll stay on track. Zinchenko was replaced by Tierney last week. And then Tierney made passes inside the pitch that were getting picked off because he's not the same player as Zinchenko. So you just see the bit of the squad depth difference that you're seeing between Arsenal and teams like Man City, where Arsenal have had mostly the same 11 for most of the season. They've started to try and rotate and they've added some players in January.
Yeah.
Whereas Man City have the benefit now of coming into really good form, starting to play an 11 most weeks now, having rotated everyone all season long. And they're coming.
Now, Granit Xhaka also missed the game, JJ.
Yes.
What do you think about that? And he was a very important player.
Well, did he miss it because he was injured, has been rested? I don't know.
He may miss the Man City game.
Fever.
Fever.
Yeah, they did miss him on the left.
Friday night fever or dance floor fever?
Well, there you go. That's never a huge loss because then he kind of runs the show. Like Odegaard takes the team on his shoulders and carries them to win games. Xhaka keeps things going in the middle of the pitch. He's been really important for them. Different kind of character and profile, like really aggressive. Fabio Vieira's not like that.
Yeah.
So just having someone in the middle who you know might put in a hard challenge on you might make you do something different now and again.
Yeah.
Whereas Fabio Vieira is very technically good, but maybe doesn't have that. It doesn't seem he's not quite aligned with what they're trying to do straight away.
Yeah,
he'll be good later.
He's new to the team as well, isn't he? And like Xhaka knits up that left side of the pitch really well when Zinchenko moves in and he goes out, and kind of those rotations.
Yeah,
they work really well when he plays, and yeah, they missed him pretty badly.
Yeah,
but you can see the pressure starts to build with this now, which makes Wednesday's game obviously it was enormous anyway, but the points gap is just gone, and the lead. It feels, I mean, it's not exactly the same at all before anyone goes at me, but like, remember Keegan's Newcastle just fell apart at the very end? It's a bit like that.
Well, let's talk about that game on Wednesday then, because David Ornstein at The Athletic did report on Monday that William Saliba will also be missing for Wednesday's game. Here's a little bit from The Athletic as well. Saliba was ever present in the top flight before his setback. Across his 27 appearances, Arsenal conceded an average of 0.9 goals per match compared to 1.8 without him.
Yeah.
Which are double-a, you know. Also, Tomiyasu is missing. And Nathan Ake is the only Man City player missing. I mean, I don't know.
The only thing Arsenal can cling on to here to really give them some hope is how does City adapt to the absence of Ake? Because all season, pretty much, he's been playing on that outside centre-back without a real left-back or left-wing-back, because it's Grealish in that kind of unique 3-2-4-1. And now their options are put Laporte there, who's a little bit less mobile than Ake, a little bit less quick, and just hope it kind of works because he can theoretically play that position. Or I was thinking, do they bring Rico Lewis back in and do that inverted thing that they tried with him? Bernardo Silva's played there. He didn't enjoy it. And then I remember they have that Sergio Gomez guy who played in the FA Cup at the weekend. So they might just do that.
They've got him, haven't they?
Yeah. And he's like a left-footed left-back. So maybe they'll change systems.
I mean, Steve Hanke, podcast producer, helpfully pointed out earlier that everyone thinks Man City are going to win. So should we move on?
They probably will.
But it's not unforeseeable that Arsenal could win this. I think it's really interesting to see what Arteta chooses to do and how he approaches the game, because Like, City have this psychological advantage now, probably, in that they can play the game. They're at home for a start, which is big.
Yes.
But Arsenal could win the game, you see. And I think it'll be very interesting to see how Arteta approaches it, because I think Man City have more of the psychological advantage. I think a few people would disagree with that. But City can control the game. They're at home. We know that now because we've double-checked it.
Yeah.
So they can play a nice patient possession game. They can wait for Arsenal to try and attack them, because Arsenal probably need to win this if they're going to win the league. And then that would naturally leave holes at the back that they could exploit in the counter. And they're quite good in the counter because they have that Erling Haaland lad up front who's quite good at doing that. So that's made them be really dangerous in transition, and also they can control games if they want to. So if Arsenal go for it and they play more direct than City do, then that could leave them vulnerable. But City, I don't know, they can just sort of play it cool. And then who's going to lose more games over the rest of the season? Man City might be a bit...
Well, as it stands, Manchester City have two games in hand and are 5 points behind.
Oh, that's bad.
So they're currently it's in their hands, right? I mean, and theoretically now you would flip it and say, well, that game against Arsenal is no longer one of the games in hand, because it's one of the games that Arsenal has. So provided that they win their other two, even if Man City and Arsenal draw, still in Man City's hands. Like, Arsenal do have to win to put it back in.
And then continue winning.
Yeah, continue winning to get it back into their own hands.
But they did that earlier in the season, yeah.
I mean, listen, no one's saying they can't do it.
But the main thing is squad depth, right?
What's that?
The main thing is squad...
I got lost in my own head there. Say that again? Squad depth.
The fact that Arsenal are, like, not as far into their development as City are, which is why they don't have the depth. Like... most of their squad is fit, other than Saliba, obviously, who I accidentally called Gabriel Saliba. His name is William. Last time I was on, some Arsenal fans corrected me.
Oh, I see. Well, it's easy to kind of, you know.
Well, he plays next to Gabriel, doesn't he?
The two players playing next to each other.
But so apart from him, most of their squad is fit now. Like, Jesus is back. Mm-hmm. But
Nicky Butt's back. He's very old. He's been... I didn't realise they'd gone out of retirement.
He was good, Nicky Butt.
That's a really good joke.
He was what?
He was good.
He was good.
Remember him at Newcastle?
I do remember that, yeah.
That's one of those transfers you don't really remember, right?
Yes, that's
remember
true.
We did this?
Yes.
Ian Rush, he played at Newcastle, remember that?
I'm just saying yes to you.
Stuart Pearce.
And they could do with Nicky Butt right now, because Thomas Partey has had a couple of real stinkers in his last couple
of
games.
He has had a couple of stinkers.
He was losing the ball very cheaply against Southampton.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Romeo Lavia in their midfield is very wavy. He's a great player.
Mm-hmm.
But that shot that Partey blazed over the bar in the 98th minute.
Oh my God.
I don't even care who won that game. But I was like screaming, like, what are you doing? It's the dumbest decision I've ever seen.
But if it had gone in, it would be amazing. Remember, like, Vincent Kompany lining up a shot from 35 yards for Man City.
I tweeted, like, why is he doing that? And somebody said, because Kompany. So, yeah, maybe that entered his mind. But the thing is, they don't really have... they're not going to rest him. They're not going to drop him. You've got to play him again. Like, there's no chance that Jorginho comes in for him in this City game. But you just need those key players like him and Jesus to be just a bit more on it. Because, you know, Jesus is underperforming his XG by about 4 goals, I think, this season.
Who's going to win?
City are going to win that game, and then City are going to win the league. But Arsenal will have given a valiant effort.
Yes. JJ?
I think it'll be a draw.
What kind of draw? A goalless draw? Score draw?
A goalful draw.
Like a 2-2?
Sure.
Wow.
I'm bad at predicting things, I know that.
That
I can
is
tell
true.
You why things have happened. Yeah. I'll show you that. I'm pretty good at that.
Captain hindsight.
Yeah, I'm Captain hindsight.
May I make a rare interjection on the analysis front?
Oh, what? You want to do a whole bit of analysis?
One thing I want to say in terms of the conversation around injuries and squad depth and stuff is that the plan going into the defence-wise this season for Arsenal would be Tomiyasu.
Yeah.
Who, against Liverpool, for example, home, play the left back, can play at centre back as well, and then play at right back. So, in a way, losing, it's a very concentrated injury.
Halfway through, pull the mic up in front of his face there. Podcast producer Steve Hanke. Sorry, carry on with your analysis, though.
So, he was part of why he's such a good player is because of his versatility. So, losing him as well as Saliba, I think, is
good
a really
point.
Like compounded, specific set of injuries.
Because they could have moved Ben White back into centre-back where he played his first season, right? And then put Tomiyasu at right-back if he'd been fit and not had to play Rob Holding.
I think that counts as a shade thrown at you, JJ Bull. That's exactly the kind of thing you should say on here. And guess what? You've made a man with a shit microphone in a different room have to say it on your behalf. What do you have to say to Steve Hanke?
I don't care.
Neither do I. There we go. That's Arsenal. More to come on Arsenal because they have to play their remaining games. They're not allowed to not play them. That's how it works in football. We'll have a break here now, and when we get back, we will discuss Newcastle at Tottenham.
Hello, I'm Ian Irving, sounding a little hoarse on Wembley Way after United have made it through to the FA Cup final. I am the host of the Athletics United podcast, Talk of the Devils, and we are bringing you our show live at Manchester's New Century Hall on Wednesday, the 17th of May. I'll be there alongside our usual cast of Andy Mitten, Carl Anker and Laurie Whitwell. We'll be sharing our unique insight and never-heard-before stories from covering United wherever they go. As well as reviewing Erik ten Hag's first season in charge, we'll also take a trip down memory lane to mark 10 years since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. Expect sweets and questionable cocktails aplenty. To book tickets, check out our social media channels for details, or you can go to myticket.co.uk and search for Talk of the Devils Live. Tickets are £25 plus booking fee. See you there.
We're back from a break again. Now, Newcastle 6-1 Tottenham Hotspur. Ruben Pinder, this was a surprise, wasn't it? I believe it was the second fastest 5-0. It was at 1.5-0 during the game of all time in the Premier League, only beaten by Man City beating Watford in 2019. I think they got there 1 or 2 minutes sooner.
I saw that stat mentioned a few times and had absolutely no recollection of that City-Watford game.
I think that's a suggestion that they just win 5-0 too many times for it to even be fucking
memorable. Well, I got confused because, do you remember City also beat Watford like 6-0 in an FA Cup final? Might have been 5. Don't know.
Don't remember.
One of the more forgettable ones. Anyway, Newcastle, yeah. It was genuinely astonishing because it looked like Spurs might as well have not been on the pitch for the first 20 minutes. They were just absolutely shell-shocked, I believe is the word. It's one of those freak results where there's very little explanation for it because the Spurs players are not that bad individually. But collectively, in this moment, as coaches might say, they are in a difficult moment. Mm. And they don't seem to have any confidence or... Like, I think the players and the man and Stellini both, or maybe it was Lloris, said they just didn't have the fight in them. And that's what it looked like. But that's not to say they don't care, which I feel like fans quite often conflate the two.
Do you think the difference is?
I think the players do care, but because of the atmosphere that's been created, they can't muster up that little extra bit of energy that is almost like adrenaline. That like they're probably trying, but because there's no cohesion, they're all just kind of going through the motions. And I don't think that's like a thing about them not caring. I think it's more of the energy being sapped out of them through like being in such a negative environment.
Yes.
But also, they changed formation. So there is a tactical element to it as well. They changed formation. They had Perisic and Pedro Porro, who are wingers converted to wingbacks, playing as fullbacks.
I mean, that did see, when you saw that ahead of the game, you did think, I mean, they're either going to win by a lot or lose by a lot.
The players in Tottenham squad who can play as the outside left-sided centre-back, Davies and Longley, they were both out. Sessegnon was out as well. So they didn't really have an actual left-back, still played the system. Dier and Romero, they both kind of tend to struggle in a four. They're much more protected by the 3/5 shape. And a lot of Newcastle's goals seem to come from Newcastle winning the ball, Spurs players being kind of caught too high, and Spurs ending up with a back two of Dier and Romero, who'd been dragged over to one side of the pitch. And then, like, if you watch Willock's outside of the boot assist for Isak, the Spurs shape is just absolutely all over the place. And then, like, once you're 3-0 down in that sort of situation, it's very difficult to motivate yourself to go and play again. But yeah, Newcastle were brilliant. They deserve a lot of praise because they pressed really well and took their chances.
Seb had an argument with some people on Twitter, JJ, about whether this was kind of down to the tactical change or not. And as Ruben mentioned, Spurs played a back four for all of those first five goals. This was the first time in I think it was a couple of years, maybe 2 or 3 years, right? Seb's broader point was that regardless of tactical setup or formation or whatever, if you concede five goals as a Premier League team with those quality of players in the first 20 minutes, that's not tactical. That's just a collapse.
Well, there's nothing wrong with playing a 4-2-3-1, for example. Like, it's not the wrong setup.
No.
Or a 4-3-3, whatever it was. But like the individuals within it, the midfield's really important in a team, obviously. But they had Saar, Skip and Højbjerg in that midfield who... I think them, along with Romero and Dier or Dier, whatever the hell's name is.
Dier. Dier's the one you hit with your car.
Yes, that's correct.
Dier's the one on the football pitch.
Yeah. Okay. And so it looks like a team that hadn't been drilled, like coached into that shape particularly well. So you had Skip is pushing up to help with the press, alongside Kulusevski, who's definitely still playing it very, and Son, either side of him, playing very much like they're still in that 3-4-3 with protection wide. And protection behind.
Yeah.
But the wing-backs that Ruben was saying would push up quite early and then they would leave Romero and Dier, exactly, as just repeating what Ruben said actually, then they'd come across a little bit. So they're the wrong shape. So they're stationed like they're in a three, but they're not. They're in a two. So there's a huge amount of space in behind them. But the midfield is empty. They're almost in a straight line at times. And so there's just nothing filled there. Ryan Mason was going nuts at Stellini on the touchline, like saying, like I don't know what he was saying, but it looked like he was saying, this is not working, you can see something.
Yeah.
And then off comes Pape Matar-Saar, that's his name, isn't it? Who just had a really, I don't think he's a bad player, because he's a really highly talented, high potential player, he'll sure. be great. But he looked like
young
he was
young player as well.
Yeah, he's young, didn't seem to know when to be and where, and I don't think that's his fault. It's going to be that he wasn't sure where everyone else is meant to be, they all looked lost.
Someone said in the WhatsApp group, it looked like they were kind of training him before the game. I mean, obviously they would have done that in the week as well, but like, yeah. You know, little quick reminders of here.
It wasn't immediately clear which of the midfielders should be in which kind of slot. Like, as you say, like Skip went forward when they didn't have the ball. But also, like, they all seemed to kind of, straight line sometimes, but then they'd all end up towards the left of the pitch, and it wasn't clear, like, okay, he's the six, he's the right side of eight, and he's the left side of eight.
And that thing, so it's like, it's like a little bit of tactical stuff, but Saar's got out of position trying to help out to try and win the ball back where he thinks he needs to be. So then Romero steps up to try and squash the space that he's left behind. And then there's a high line they're playing as well, but there's a lot of depth between the strikers and the centre-backs with no midfield in it. So it's a horrible tactical mess. But then like the first goal, Romero just lets... I can't remember, runs
Joe
past
Linton's
him.
Joe Linton's cutting in from the left.
It lets him go past him. Doesn't make the tackle. It's in the box, maybe that's why. But like they just weren't engaged particularly aggressively or physically for the start of it. And they just looked like they didn't really know exactly what they were doing. Like, they hadn't been taught exactly how to do it.
Yeah.
Or that the manager wasn't exactly sure where they should be. I mean, I'm sure they know how this works. It's a very simple setup, the 4-2-3-1 that they're trying to do here. But that it did not work in the form they've had. Having changed from a system they've been using for years, like, it made sense to do that. And it's very hard to do that mid-season. It's why, like, managers want a pre-season when they come in with new ideas. They don't just bring in a new formation halfway through a season often. Like, some people could do it. Like, Conte did it at Chelsea. Changed it all of a sudden, and that's how they won that league. But I think that's because it's maybe easier to make a more defensive thing because it's maybe easier to train the defensive side of it rather than trying to get all things going at once. I don't know. Maybe that's completely wrong. I've never tried to coach a Premier League team. I don't know. But yeah.
Well, speaking of trying to coach a Premier League team, it does seem like Nagelsmann is no longer in the running for the Chelsea job, right? Mm-hmm. I believe I read that before the weekend. Yeah. I mean, that does leave Tottenham wide open. I haven't seen anything or read anything about whether this is going to happen or not. But you would have thought the main thing standing in Tottenham's way before was Chelsea. If they no longer are... Real Madrid, I suppose, but is Nagelsmann
an appealing job for Nagelsmann right now?
I mean, I wonder. I keep reading people say managers all think they can fix everything, right?
That's like, yeah, you kind probably of need like that ego, don't you?
Well, it's like an issue that they all, like a psychological issue that they all have, is that they think the one downside and the upside at the same time is like, yeah, I can fix that, even if you can't. It's why people keep taking the Man United job. You know, who the fuck would take that job?
Yeah,
people who think they can fix everything.
But that's a job with a. Like, there's no ceiling on it. You could go nuts with that job.
Yeah.
So it's really appealing. It's huge. Whereas Spurs, I wonder if managers would look at the way it's gone from Mourinho and Conte, two of the best managers in the world, like, undoubtedly, and they've not been able to crack it. And so do you think, well, if I go there, that might be damaging?
I don't know, man. I think so? I think, again, like, I think the power of the ego, the I can, the central me, like, you look at Mourinho also, what does that give? It presents you an option that you see Mourinho and Conte unable to do it. It means if I go there and do it, I'm better than they are.
Like, I think it's just slightly different with Spurs, though, because there's definitely that sort of limit. And then coming to the end of this cycle with Kane and Son.
Sure, but put it this way instead, right? If you're Nagelsmann, you've just been at Bayern, Yeah. You've just essentially, you know, air quotes, failed at Bayern Munich, right? You could go to Real Madrid probably in the summer, and know that Florentino Perez was interested in him 2 or 3 years ago before he went to Bayern Munich, so that that relationship exists. You could go there, and if you don't win the Champions League, fail at Real Madrid. There are no other major slots open with the exception of Chelsea, and for whatever reason, that's not happening. At Tottenham, not only do you have a ceiling, which is kind of great in a sense because of expectations, you can actually outperform expectations in a way that you can't with the bigger teams. You're right that the perception and the perspective of the team is that Kane's coming to an end, that kind of era of players is coming to an end. Therefore, if you do something with this team, that's super impressive, right? If you turn them into a team that perhaps even once, just like Pochettino does, challenges for the title, that's pretty incredible. Like, and to be honest, they have one of the biggest stadiums in the country. They make more money from matchday income than any other club, apart from Arsenal, maybe.
They've got the best training ground in the world.
They've got the best training ground in the world. They've got, like, the ceiling on their commercial income is as high as every other club, every other top six club, right? They are set up for long-term success.
I was going to say...
And you can live in London.
Yeah, I was going to say, but they need loads of new players. But that...
That's a good thing for a manager, isn't it? Doesn't a manager want to buy their own players?
Well, yeah, maybe. But then I started thinking, are we falling into the trap of watching a team kind of deteriorate under toxic management and then assuming all the players are crap? Maybe. When actually, quite often, new manager comes in, everybody's happy again. Yeah, man. And...
Well, we talk about Pedro Porro, we said, perhaps who I think has only started as a fullback like twice ever, played as fullback in this, surprise, surprise, 6-1. He's one of the highest rated wingbacks in the world. Like, he's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, he hasn't become terrible overnight.
No, like, Kulusevski's son, Kane, is probably the best actual attacking front three.
Kulusevski has a son called Kane.
Kulusevski's son and Kane.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
I see where you got lost there.
Right.
But they're probably the best attacking three in the league.
Like, yes.
There were conversations last season, like, who's got the best front three in the league? And a lot of people were like, well, they're not in the best team, but it might be those three.
I know who's got the second best, though.
Who's that?
It's Aston Villa, obviously, because they're the second best team in the league.
Jacob Ramsey, Ollie Watkins, Buendia, yeah.
And like, as we've seen with Aberdeen recently, their players looked absolutely useless for the last season, like losing like 5 and 6-0, just terrible results. Yeah.
Right.
And then a manager who was one of the youth coaches, Barry Robson, has come in to take charge of it, and they've won like 7 in a row, and the players suddenly look amazing, and the plan works perfectly, and they look really well coached, and suddenly those players are good.
Love a person called Barry.
Yeah.
Same thing happened at Palace this season as well. It's just vibes. Happiness can get a lot out of players.
Yeah.
So bring in, as I said a few weeks ago, give it Mace to the end of the season.
Well, that's down here, isn't it? Because give it Mace until the end of the season. You refer, of course, to Ryan Mason. Mm. I mean, Stellini is already the temporary caretaker coach. Already, they fired the other
interim
coach.
To the interim.
Yeah, I mean, could we have an interim for They've the all interim? Got for him.
Well,
at this point,
this
would you give
problem.
It to Mace?
I would, because they
Mace
they've sacked Conte and left his right hand man in charge. So
yeah, that's what they've done.
Not that much has actually changed for the players. They're not getting like bollockings, for lack of a better word, from Conte anymore. But they're getting the same kind of tactics and the absence of any real difference and improvement.
Yeah.
So
what do you think Mace would do, though?
He'd just put an arm around the shoulder and say, it's all right, Pierre. Right. I know you're a good player. Now stop messing about. And, you know,
problem is, though, if he did that during a game, there'd be 12 players on the pitch.
We do it before the game.
Before the game.
Yeah. In training. Yeah.
Understood. Okay.
I just think they'd probably be a bit happier.
You think so?
I mean, it can't really get much worse, can it? Like, it can. They can slide down the table. But at the moment, like, well, but that's the nadir, right? That result.
What if they hate Ryan Mason? What if he's the problem? Have you considered
this? I haven't considered
that.
No,
I don't know. The thing is, I'm sure they don't. Yeah, I'm absolutely certain they don't hate Ryan Mason. But all I mean, I guess, is that when we start talking about the intangible vibe, you're right.
We're all speculating, though.
The Roy Hodgson thing at Crystal Palace is like fucking weird. It's weird. Why? And it's annoying because you can't exactly say why it's happening, but it is happening. You have to look at it and say, well, that's old granddad Roy. He's really getting those youngsters a tickle in. Do you know what I'm saying? It's amazing.
I suppose my point is, this is pretty much rock bottom for Spurs, and can they move on without changing anything? Do they just...
Yeah.
Because you like, as Jack Pitbrook wrote in his brilliant article summing up this this game, it's like you thought this was the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And then they find a new low. but this has surely got to be the lowest of the low.
Well, I mean, that's true. It probably is the lowest because next weekend they play Manchester United, another team who got absolutely fucking hammered by someone relatively recently, lest we forget the 7-0 at the hands of Liverpool. So it's two embarrassed teams with tails between their legs. They meet and they have a dogfight in a car park. That's it, isn't it? That's how it works. Yeah. What do you think about that one?
What is it? Spurs versus Man United having a fight in a car park.
No, just they play each other next weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's nice, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, there we go. Speaking of Manchester United, let's talk about the FA Cup now, because it was, of course, the semi-finals of the FA Cup, the penultimate round over the weekend. And Sunday saw Man United and Brighton play out a thrilling 0-0 draw over 120 minutes. I jest, it was actually quite good at times. A very even game. And it went to penalties, didn't it, JJ Bull? Went to penalties, and Man United won only their second. Oh, you're looking at me like you didn't see that. Did you miss that one? Yes, okay. Baby boy Pinder. It went to penalties, and I believe Man United won only their second penalty shootout of the last 8 or 9 or something. Mm. And they did it because Brighton missed like the 8th penalty.
When was the last time they won a penalty shootout?
They won one in 2019, but it was in like a domestic cup in the earlier rounds against a team that's not in the Premier League.
Right.
And I believe David De Gea is yet to save a penalty in a penalty shootout.
That sounds about right, because the one that I'm thinking of is when they played Villarreal in the Europa League final and De Gea conceded.
That was 22-21.
He conceded 11.
I think he literally 21. Conceded 21. I think they definitely went all the way through the whole team.
Twice,
yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
And then he missed his penalty.
And it was him that missed it the second time around, I think.
It's brutal, isn't it? But penalties are absolutely brutal to watch. And like, I wasn't really a neutral in this game, but even...
Who are you supporting?
Manchester United.
Oh, why?
My dad supports them, and Palace and Brighton don't like each other.
Oh, you hate Brighton? Of course.
A bit.
Yeah.
But even for actual neutrals, I find watching penalty shootouts like unbearable.
Yeah. I don't like
There was a lot of good penalties in this shootout, though, especially Lindelof's one to win it. That was good. I thought he had a really good game, actually, in a bit of a makeshift defence. Shaw next to him at centre-back, Dalot playing on his weak side.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got Wan-Bissaka to his right, and he, no bias here, he put on a masterclass against Mitoma defensively, because Mitoma, famously one of the best dribblers in the league.
Sure.
And Wan-Bissaka was incredible.
And that is
incredible.
Famous, that one.
Yeah, because he's written a whole thing about it, isn't he? It was very scrappy. It wasn't very fluid. Neither team really played their best football, but I'm glad United made it through. Should make for a better final.
JJ Bull, Brighton actually went into this game with the odds, as the bookmakers' odds suggested that they were more likely to win it than Manchester United were.
Wow.
I mean, that really tells you something about the season, doesn't it?
It might have to do with Man United not having any of their good defenders back or available. Sure. And De Gea not being able to pass very well to them in build-up.
Yeah.
Pumped it long quite often in this game.
Yeah. I don't know, United are weird, aren't they? Because it was a long time ago when John correctly pointed out that they weren't actually playing that well and they're probably going to lose some games, and then that started to happen. But they've got good players, so they should win games. Brighton very well coached. Man United also quite well coached. Don't know what I'm saying. I feel really ill all of a sudden.
I'm tempted to just let you run. Did you watch the other game, the Manchester City Sheffield United?
I did see some of that, yes.
I thought Sheffield United, that game finished 2-0, I believe. No? Was it more in the end?
Three.
Sure. Mahrez got a hat trick.
Mahrez got a hat trick.
Oh, Mahrez got a hat trick. Of course he did.
Scored 3 goals.
By 2-0, what I mean is I stopped watching it too. I thoroughly enjoyed a quick note on this, that the opening half, because Sheffield United played very well. I thought for a while, I was thinking, oh, wow, they might actually do this. They might keep Man City out. And they had a couple of good opportunities in the first 20 minutes as well.
Well, they're getting promoted, aren't they, from the Championship? Paul Heckenbottom, who was like driven out of Hibs when he was in charge there. No one thought he was very good. Now he's got Sheffield United to the Premier League.
Someone drove him out. They put him in a car.
Yes.
Wow.
They drove him out themselves.
Yeah. Was it snowed in or something? What was the situation?
No, he said, I would want to go fast. And then they said, well, you're going to have to drive. He said, but I want to run. That's what he said.
Oh.
So they had a car delivered, very fast car.
And he ran behind the car.
No, he got in the car.
He got in the car.
And they drove it a normal way.
Oh.
All the way to Sheffield.
And now he's getting promoted with Sheffield United.
And then he became a real boy.
Yeah.
And then Man City did them. Apparently, like,
do you still feel sick?
Yeah. Apparently, like, I can't remember who said this. It might have been in The Athletic even, but there was a weird feel at Wembley for this game because the Sheffield United knew they weren't going to win.
Yeah, there sort of wasn't City sort that of many knew that people there. Anyway.
Yeah, Man City got loads of stick for not selling out their end, but like they've been to Wembley like what feels like three times a season for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's not that special for their fans anymore, especially when you know you're going to win. You have to go down to London. It's very expensive.
It's also like if it was just the going to London, great, you can have a good time. But it's not. It's going to London. And then going to Wembley,
yeah.
Which is not... People who haven't been to Wembley before to see a game of football happen. When you try to leave...
With loads of fans in the stadium.
With loads of fans at the stadium. When you try to leave, you walk down Wembley Way. That's where you walk down, the way that was.
You know it's actually
Wembley.
Called Olympic Way.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why do they call it Wembley Way?
I don't know.
Oh.
Anyway, continue, sorry.
Well, you walk down Wembley Olympic Way... back towards the tube. I think it's on the Brown Line. Isn't
it's
it?
On the Metropolitan Line.
Metropolitan Line? The Maroon Line, yes.
Great line.
And then you wait forever to walk up some stairs, and then you wait for even longer to get on a tube. And it's quite annoying, isn't it? So that's why I always don't go.
To manage the crowds when going up the stairs back into the station, they have like lines of security that all link arms.
That's true.
And then eventually there's a noise that goes off, and they all... drop their arms and it's you like a stampede through. To go through. Yeah. But it feels like you're on like gladiators or you're like a horse.
Anyway, I've got a story about this. So it's a very quick story. Don't worry. It's just a quick detour there, Steve Hanke. Very, 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 very quick. When I was a young man, I went to visit a protest. Yeah, you ever heard of a protest before? When you tell the government to fuck off? I went to one of those.
Did quite well in France just now. I've seen
They're doing well over there, aren't they? Vive la France. Anyway, I don't know what that means. I know what it means, but I don't know what it means in context of the current political... I don't know what I'm saying. I have no idea what's happening. Just ignore me. But anyway, I went to a very small protest just to watch it. No, I wasn't really participating. I was just curious with some friends to go down and see. And it was Occupy Parliament Square. Remember when people were occupying things? Yeah. Mm. When they occupied Wall Street and they occupied some other places and then eventually they left. I heard there was one happening in Parliament Square, which is opposite the Westminster, opposite the Halls of Parliament, and is this big square of grass where historically citizens have been allowed to go and protest. It's often where protest will make birth or end, you know? And anyway, this group of young people were attempting to occupy this square. There were a few tents and tarpaulin and whatever. I went down with my friend Richard to just go and see what's going on. A couple of people were talking there. Anyway, we got kettled there by the police, by which I mean we got surrounded by the police. And all of these committed young activist people, they all sat down on their tarpaulin, which the police were trying to steal. Because the police realised, I think, if we take away these people's tarpaulin, they have to sit on the wet ground, they'll probably go home. And the people, fair enough, were saying, well, this is my tarpaulin, and I want to keep it here. And that was the battle. And I accidentally got kettled. I wasn't doing anything. I was just sort of stood there. All the activists sat down in a circle on their tarpaulin. I was kind of stood awkwardly at the outskirts of this circle. And the police kettle, it came in, it closed in until I was face to face with a policeman.
Did you try to reason with him?
Well, I could either look at him or I could turn around and look at the activists. And they were looking at me saying, what are you doing? You're a big lad. If you sit down, they'll never get this tarpaulin. No one could ever pull the chair out from under you. And I was like, hell yes, I'm just here to look, really. Look at the policeman who was like, what are you doing here? I'm asking you to leave. I'd be like, I don't know, I'm just here to look, really. Got stuck in a trap of my own making until I said to the policeman, I said, excuse me, sir, can I get out? And he said, you want to get out? And I was like, yeah. And he went, yeah. And then he just let me out. And I ran away.
And they all screamed at you for being a scab.
That's my story.
Is this a storyline from Seinfeld?
Yeah, I was going to say it's very Mark Corrigan. Just
George
going
Costanza.
Like,
I didn't mean to get kettled. I just wanted to see what was going on, you know?
Kramer's in the middle of the protest.
Anyway, I also text an old school acquaintance of mine who worked in the Houses of Parliament and said, oh, I'm nearby. Do you want to get a drink? She was like, yeah, where are you? I said, I'm at the Occupy protest movement over the street. She never takes me back.
It's good.
I get it. I understand. It's fine. I found that quite funny. What are we talking about?
Well,
the FA Cup.
Yeah, FA Cup. I've put the attendance in there for you for the Man City Sheffield United game.
What was the attendance?
So 69 out of 90. So there's a good old 20,000 seats that just weren't taken.
Well, you've said that now, Steve. I think that's good to stay in.
Okay.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Why not? Well, let's have a break then, and when we come back, we'll discuss some other games of football that happened. Oh, back from a break there. There we go. Was everyone going to enjoy that break? Have a nice break.
Mm. You never actually give us a break.
Well, don't spoil the magic, Ruben Pinder. Come on now. Are you feeling better? No, what's wrong with you?
I'm going to have to go home after this.
Really? I'm going home after this on account of...
That you have a hole in your mouth.
There's an open wound in my mouth and I don't want to dislodge the clot.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you feeling? Are you feeling okay?
I'm okay, yeah.
Yeah?
A bit hot. But yeah. That's just the studio.
Well, that temperature is important for...
health.
Health and... babies. Wrexham 3.
We're one. Fine, by the way, Joe. Thanks for asking.
Fuck you. You're in a different room. Wrexham 3. 1. Boreham Wood. Now, this was a promotion game, of course. We very nearly sent you there, Ruben Pinder.
Very nearly.
And then we didn't because it was too expensive. Richard Sutcliffe of The Athletic, Sooty, as he's known, he was there and he reported on it, took some videos on his phone for us of the pitch invasion at 90 minutes. Looked tremendously exciting, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It looked pretty magical. Some people will try to denigrate the fairy tale of Wrexham, but
what will they say?
They'd say they've spent loads more money than everybody else down there, right. But who cares? I think they're doing, like, the owners are doing things the right way. They clearly care. They have dreams of reaching the Premier League, and they might struggle to get there, but they have made a lot of people very happy, having taken over a club that was in a bit of a mess. And if you can't be pleased for the fans of Wrexham, then I think you need to inject some joy into your life.
Yeah.
But it was great scenes, just great scenes.
I find it funny what they've done to newspaper editors all over the country. Mm. A mixture of people going like, yes, more amazing news that the Americans love. And or like, God, for God's sake, why is Wrexham the best performing thing?
Yeah, I've got a friend who supports Grimsby Town and they had a run in the FA Cup. I think Brighton knocked them out. And he was complaining that is objectively the good story, but then Wrexham were always in the headlines above them, and I'm like,
sure,
yeah, object, like, that is a more impressive thing, but also more people care about this. So, but like Rob and Ryan, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney after the game, shedding real tears. I enjoyed that. That was nice.
Yeah, I mean, it would be hard to pretend that they didn't care or were the same.
Yeah, people. As other I saw some people saying about they're actors. Yeah. Of course, they're fake crying, and I'm like, come on.
Seems like a lot of effort to go to
for
what's probably just, you know, like a... I mean, it's a very well-made documentary, but I doubt it's really making a significant difference to their wealth.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably costing them money, I would have thought. Not the show, I mean the whole advent. So it's strange to really think through the reasons. Well, what about you? You maintain that they're all faking it, don't you?
I've never said that.
I'm just joking.
I really like Wrexham. I think it's a nice story because anything in the UK, when people start doing well, everyone has to hate it. That's what.
Yeah.
That's what.
That's
happens.
Why we're killing the show.
Yeah.
By the way, it's the main reason.
Just starting that now.
Yeah. It's a lovely story, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You like it?
I do really like it. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you like about it? What does it make you feel?
Delight.
It makes you feel the light or delight.
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 Yeah.
That's cool. And what about Aberdeen 2? Oh, no, there's still one more question on here, isn't there, before we get to Aberdeen? Just a quick one. How far are Wrexham going to go? That was the question.
I think, judging by my Football Manager save, they'll fly up the lower leagues quite quickly. With momentum, a well-run club, they'll have to get investment to have cash injections to pay the different budgets they'll need to have the players to get them there.
Yeah.
But if you look at how Bournemouth did it, that's probably a similar kind of path. Very small, tiny stadium still. But they're really well-run club, and they should be able to ride the momentum. And they've got good players now already. Like Elliot Lee, they've got. He says it's a League One team. I think it was him who's quoted as saying it's basically a League One team already. Paul Mullen's amazing; could easily play Championship, probably Premier League.
Right.
Paul Mullen, and then they'll just add players to it. They've got good characters. Parkinson's a very capable manager. He's been promoted. This is his fourth promotion, I think. His teams just make sense. And so he gets teams better than they were. He coaches players, so they become better. They could quite easily ride it up, but it'll be. I think I was talking this with John McKenzie the other day, and he reckons he might get stuck in League One because it's quite difficult.
Yeah.
And there's an article in The Athletic actually recently about what the difference in talent level is between like League Two and, you know, Premier League or whatever. Because if you think that, again, at Bournemouth, some of the players they had in the lower leagues played with them in the Premier League.
Yeah.
I think like Steve Cook maybe, or Charlie Daniels.
I might be wrong. Francis, Adam Smith.
I think some of them. I might have got a couple of them wrong. But so they can do it. And it's just that if you don't have a cohesive team, and I keep saying this in recent podcasts, that if you what you see in the boardroom tends to be what is reflected on the pitch. If it's really cohesive and there's strategy and it's an environment that is conducive to competition and excelling in that, then you'll maybe see it play out on the pitch. And Wrexham have that. Like, they're just really well run. They would have been promoted ages ago were it not for Notts County being phenomenal.
Yeah.
They've broken the all-time record points in the National League. They are now one of the most famous football clubs probably in the world. They are like the numbers you see on all newspapers cover them.
Yeah.
They're a national league team. Who cares? Everyone does. And that TV show is part of it. And I think like the weird thing with it, if you consider how this works with Disney as a model, because they've got that show on Disney, they now have this show which is really compelling to watch. And I like the way it's been, like the way that's put together, it's nice.
It's smart, yeah.
It changes. It's like a bit Monty Python-ish. You know, you don't know what you're going to get each week. I like that. And so when they get to a point, if at worst they were stuck in League One and they couldn't get out of it, it's not good for the show. So what Disney then put in money to inject to try and get them over the line, because it makes their show better, it generates loads of money for Disney, and also then the club then, you know, symbiotically grows up the league and does that. It's a really novel.
That, wouldn't they? Like fans of other teams, would probably hate that.
They hate everything, don't they?
Yeah.
Anything successful, they hate.
The consensus seems to be they'll get stuck in League One.
I think that'll be the Premier League. I think they'll be back-to-back.
That's back-to-back.
Yeah.
You think that they're going to win the league next season?
I did it on Football Manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, that's real.
How many years until the Premier League?
I think give them 2 years in the Championship. It's not back-to-back. So 2 years in the Championship to get up. Because there's so many places.
How many years in total is that from now? If next season's
league
season
two,
one?
League One, Championship, Premier League. So like 5 years.
You think 5 years? Nah. That's mad. That's mad. Is that what happened in the Championship?
It's probably actually
in your Football Manager game.
That's what I did. Yeah, it's probably I did it back to back. But it was probably.
I was going to say
seven or 8 years probably.
What do you think, Steve Hankey?
I think they will. Well, I mean, you've seen Bournemouth do it, haven't you? So there is a precedent for teams just keeping going and that momentum.
Yeah.
I kind of think whether it's League One or Championship, I think there will be a double season somewhere. But it could easily be six.
Because you can get promoted in like third place or something.
And it's also soft factor stuff now. People like Ben Foster go in there. There'll be other players who would go below a division because of everything around them.
I think it's 10 years. I still don't think you get up sooner than. But anyway,
depends how much money they want to pump in, doesn't it?
Yeah. We'll never know.
Because I'll tell you what, how about this? When Wrexham get promoted to the Premier League, we'll come back and we'll do one special show. Yeah? Like in the olden days, like today will be the olden days.
Like LCD sound system, we'll buy all the equipment back. And
you'll be, I don't know, how old are you now? You'll be in your late 40s.
What, in 10 years?
I'll be early 40s. Yeah. Ruben will be 12. It'll be great.
Yeah.
We can find out what his favourite subject at the school is.
That'd be good.
All right, cool. Before we finish, Aberdeen 2, nil Rangers. Now, from what I understand about Scottish football, which is... Lots. Yeah. That's quite a surprising scoreline, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Aberdeen rarely beat Rangers because they have much better players.
Yeah.
And they tend to win all their games.
Right.
It's a huge result for Aberdeen. I think it's interesting in the context of our show because it's, I think we mentioned it a bit earlier. I don't know if that bit is in the podcast or not, but Barry Robson is the manager. So, like, Aberdeen were getting absolutely pummeled this season. They should finish. Hearts and Aberdeen should be the ones that are fighting for third place. You can't really close the gap on Rangers and Celtic because the money difference is enormous.
And there's currently 5 points between them. Aberdeen on 53, Hearts of Midlothian on 48.
If you look at the goal difference in the league, you can see where the problem kind of lies. It's a
yes.
This is where Celtic have a goal difference of +78.
Yes, right. And Aberdeen have a goal difference of zero.
It's not competitive really, and Rangers are quite far behind Celtic at the moment. Celtic have been there for ages, so that kind of makes sense. But Aberdeen Hearts find out. But like when you see a team full of players and they just look hopeless, like rudderless, they are getting turned over by bad teams. Like Aberdeen lost to Darvel, a junior team in a cup.
Yeah,
in the Scottish Cup, which is humiliating.
Oh,
Didn't fire the manager Jim Goodman after that. He got done after they lost, I think it was 6-1 to Hibs.
Right.
It's another like humiliating result.
No hope, nay hinder.
Absolutely.
Nay rudder.
And so then they decided to have, you know, got rid of Jim Goodman. He was gone. The chairman, Dave Cormack's been trying to choose the right option for who to get, but looking into like managers that maybe have come from a market like Denmark or Croatia, someone who's achieved something with a relatively similar size team, you know, against the odds to try and get someone who could then do that in the Premiership rather than just getting the same faces that you always get in these leagues. Like the same manager comes somewhere else and they're there for 2 years, they're all right, they disappear. So while they're looking for that, Barry Robson, who's used to play for Middlesbrough and Celtic and Scotland, has been Aberdeen for a long time as a coach. He's from Aberdeen. And so he got put in charge.
Have you ever met him in a pub?
I haven't, no. But several of my friends have met his dad loads.
Really?
Because he drinks in Inverurie.
His dad lives in the local area.
I think so, yeah.
But he's a proud father.
I suspect so, yeah. Well, his boy's done very well. Yeah. And he speaks very well.
Does he?
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, yeah.
He doesn't speak as fast as you.
Well, that's one thing.
Right.
And if I could give you any advice, don't speak as fast as I do.
Please slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'd love to see you on a Valium or something.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll tell you what, carry on, but then try it like...
slower.
At 75% speed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here I go.
Oh.
In the Valley's accent.
Barry Robson. I became the interim manager. And people didn't know how good he would be. Aberdeen. But he's been so good. And we have won like 7 games in a row now. Including against Rangers, I don't like it. And so now I'm thinking Barry Robson might actually be the best option this guy's come through. But he's made these players like really good. He's made them really good.
I can't hear
what
anything
am
you're
I
saying,
talking about today.
No, I really like the content of what you're saying is great, but I'm just listening to your pacing because what you did there was you said and the Barry Robson very slow, and I was like, oh, he's taking it seriously.
He slowed down, then he went straight back up.
Did I speed up straight away?
You sped up for the middle bit. Which was the interlocker between the two sentences. So for people who don't speak English as a first language, you're a barrier to entry.
Then right
and that's another
right
reason why
the
we're killing
the
show.
Of the American girl accent came back as
my
well.
My brain goes too fast for my mouth.
Your brain speaks to your mouth fast.
It goes too quickly and I can't do it all at once.
Do you know what? No shit. You said this to me in your job interview.
Did I?
Yeah. Bit of a humble brag, that, isn't it? I'm too clever for my own mouth.
It is a bit, isn't it? Yeah. I think that's true, yeah.
I don't want to come across like that.
What about you? What happens in your brain?
Not a lot.
Not a lot?
Not today. I don't feel like I've said anything of note today.
Are you hungry?
Yes.
Okay. Good to know. Well, listen, there we go. That was Aberdeen.
I ended on a humble brag. I don't want that.
No, you can end on something else
I'm
if
only
you want.
Poking.
No, it's
fine. Well, listen, we've announced the show's ending today. Do you want to end on your favourite memory?
When I wore all the shirts,
yeah.
Mostly when
I knew you were going to say that.
All the best ones were ones where we can't stop laughing at things.
Yeah, all that stuff gets cut out, doesn't it?
Yeah. But that is my favourite.
Yeah. What about you, Ruben? I know you only remember back 6 weeks. But what do you? What's
4 hours
favorite
at a time.
Memory?
My favourite memory of this show
is it when you told me that the show got better when I went away. That was funny.
That was funny.
That was
I was very proud of that.
That was good. I was proud of you.
Making my debut. I think, proud moment for me and my family.
There we go. Yeah. Well, there you go, Mr. Pinder. Congratulations. He's a fine baby.
Yeah.
Delightful. Steve Hankey, favourite memory for you?
I think I was thinking about Cafetiergate. That was pretty funny.
Oh yeah, Cafetiergate.
That was good.
Though I have watched the dressing room halftime speech about 20 times this week.
Oh yeah, the dressing room speech from last week.
I did show that to a few people.
I like that bit. Yeah.
What was the thing, John, about the salmon in the bath? That was a weird one.
Salmon in the bath.
That was me.
That was you.
Your pet salmon in the bath.
Well, it's like if you have, it's to do with like we're discussing the mermaid laws today, when it's okay to kill your pet to eat it. That was what we were talking about.
That was it.
Because if you have a pet cow, again, I'll bring it up. If you have a cow and it's your pet and you love the cow, but you kill it to eat it, that's fine. But if it was a dog, they think you were mental.
It's just a social
thing,
which animals have been properly domesticated, etc.
Mermaid. If you keep a mermaid as a pet, does that mean
you... Are you seriously saying you would eat a mermaid?
No, well, it depends what bit of the mermaid... Well, no, I don't want to get into it.
What if the mermaid tasted just like salmon?
I don't want to eat a mermaid.
No, but what if it tasted like salmon?
Well, I still don't want to eat it.
What if it was already dead and it tasted like the salmon and you didn't have any other food?
I don't know where...
What if you otherwise... Your alternative was you were going to die if you didn't eat the mermaid that was already dead.
Then I would eat the mermaid.
Oh, JJ Bull said he'd eat a mermaid. That's disgusting. Didn't you know that's canifushableism?
The top half of
it
as well.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Pesca cannibalism.
Yeah, exactly. Pesca cannibalism. Now, Jamie, what about you? What's your favourite memory?
This one.
Yeah, when he spoke for the first and last time. There he was.
Jamie, we've still got loads of shows to do before we kill it.
No, we're going to have new memories every week. Yeah. I'm only doing it because you felt bad about the humble brag.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. But I've brought it up again.
And I like talking about what animals you can and cannot eat.
Yeah.
And I don't like talking about that.
Either. One more. Say one more animal. No, just one word, animal only, that and will decide whether you can or can't eat it.
Dragon.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think, especially if it's those Game of Thrones ones. Stupid, aren't they?
Meaty.
Meaty. Smoky. All right, there we go. That's the end. Not forever, just for today. There are 6 more episodes, and then there's a live show. Remember to look at that link, though, in the description of wherever you're watching the podcast, to get tickets to the live show, TIFO Football Live. It's going to be fun. Accessible to all. Looking at you because you look like you're about to say something.
No,
he's not going to say anything. What about you? You got nothing to say?
No,
nothing to say. Well, there we go. Fine. In which case, that's the end of the TIFO Football Podcast for today. We'll be back again next week with more. But until then, au revoir, bienvenue, and tschüss.
Athletic.